One of the things about Scripture is there's a spirit and attitude behind that, behind the commands that we're given, that if you ignore or divorce from the commands themselves, the commands become cumbersome. But if you understand them in context, then they are, they're acceptable, and we can get behind and endorse fully. Maybe you've driven down the street sometime, someplace, and you've come across a school zone, and it's early in the morning and you're in a hurry to get somewhere, and you see this school zone 25 mile an hour. And so you slow the car down to 25, and you're still like 2,000 yards from the school, it seems like. And you're like, why are we slowing down here? And you know, you've got places to go, and when you get down to 25, it almost seems like you're not even moving. It's just so slow, and you're tempted to just keep it at 30, maybe 35. And if you see some policeman, then you'll slow it down a little bit more. But we want to just rush right through those signs. They seem arbitrary. They seem a little bit unnecessary, a little over the top. And, you know, I don't really understand. I'll do it because if I don't, I'll get in trouble. But you see, if I knew there wasn't a policeman there, I'd probably break that law. Let's take the same situation, and you're driving down that school zone one day, and you're still frustrated with those laws, but a child jumps out in front of you from between two cars, and you didn't see it, and you were right on him, and you almost ran over a child. I think you'll view those speed limit signs differently after that day. You see, because at first they just seemed arbitrary and difficult to abide by. But once you saw the purpose behind the law, it becomes much easier to listen to and to abide by. The Hebrew writer said concerning the new covenant that Jesus was to give that it was going to be a covenant that is written on our hearts, not just on tables of stone. It's not just in the law books, but it was going to be written on our heart. And when we understand the commands that God give us are given for our good and for the good of others, it's so much easier to do what he asks us to do, even when it's difficult, than if we had never had that understanding of the purpose. Back a few weeks ago, it's interesting whenever you talk about giving, and that's we're going to talk a little bit about giving this morning, but it's broader than just that, and it's really more about attitudes than it is just the action itself of giving. I don't want, and I don't preach this lesson because I want you to give more, any more than I want you to be baptized, because, you know, there has to be more to it. If I can convince you to get baptized this morning, if I didn't convince you also to make Jesus Lord of your life, then I've wasted my time. I haven't done you a favor or the church a favor in doing that. There are actions, if they're divorced from their understanding, mean nothing. It's not my desire to just baptize people today so we can say, we baptized five folks today. It's my desire that you make Jesus Lord of your life. And in so doing, you'll follow his command to be baptized and to receive the blessings that come from it. It's not my desire to say, give more money to the church. It's my desire to help us all to give ourselves more fully to the cause of Christ, and the other will take care of itself. This really isn't a lesson about, and whenever we talk about giving, and it is a biblical topic, but whenever we talk about it, it's not a lesson about giving per se. It's about commitment to Jesus, conversion. And that's what I want us to discuss this morning. I remember when I was a boy and it would be my turn. I was a high school kid or maybe in junior high or something, and we would pass the trays around. And I have a memory of one man that sat in the very back row on, if you're standing in the pulpit, on the left hand side. And, he was, Well, when you pass the tray to him, by then it would be full. There would be a lot of money in it. And he would have his hand clenched and he would like put it down in, kind of bury it in the money so you couldn't see, and then let go. And you would always hear a clank. So he was putting coins in, but he didn't want anybody to see. He was, I don't know, maybe embarrassed. I don't know what was his problem, or why he did what he did, but it was a very obvious shaking around and then like that and pull his hand out and pass it to the next person. I remember that because it was every single time. A couple months ago, I was sitting behind Leilani. I don't know where she is, but she's here. She's looking at me. Yeah. But the collection plate was passed and she had some change in her hand and boy, she had it squeezed tight. And when that came time to put that money in there, she opened her hand to let it look, well, it stuck. You know, she had it so tight, it was stuck on her hand. And so she flicked the coins off of her hand in there, and then when she took the tray and passed it on to the man that was serving, she said, "Thank you." I thought, wow, you know, that, you know, she said thank you for the opportunity to give. And it's, you know, such a contrast to the man who tried to hide what he was giving. What I want us to do is to develop that attitude that she has, to find giving as a joy and as an opportunity to serve the Lord, and to be able to say at the end of the day, thank you for the opportunity to give and to be a part of this service. I know in Philippians chapter 4, Paul, as he's bringing that letter to a close, he says to the folks there, you know, it's not that I want your money. I really don't. But you guys have supported me from the beginning of my ministry, even in Thessalonica. You gave once and again to my needs. And I appreciate all that. But really, you know what I appreciate? The fact that that money that you gave makes you partners with me in the work that I'm doing. And the fruit that I am able to bear is credited to your account. You become a participant. And Paul said, that's what I really am thankful for in the gift that you've given me. And so this morning, I want us to look, if you have your Bible, go ahead and open it to Luke chapter 20, because I want us to look at this passage, because we have quite a contrast here. And I think this is one of those unfortunate places where a chapter break has kind of messed up the thought of Jesus. I think if we divorce the very end of chapter 20 from the very beginning of chapter 21, we kind of break up a thought and a contrast that Jesus was making in this passage. But I'd like for us to look, because here we see the scribes with all their might and their political power and their religious power. They're at the top of the heap. These mighty men, these religious leaders. And then we see this widow woman and her two mites. And that's all she has. And what I love about the story and about Jesus himself is that he looks at things and sees things in ways that everybody else just misses. The world, looking through worldly eyes and worldly glasses, would just see it and they would move on. And Jesus pulls things out constantly that challenges us in our conventional thinking. Jesus makes heroes of the least likely people. He lifts up and calls out and brings to our attention some of the least qualified people that we would look at and say, well, that's nothing. They're the ones Jesus said, take a look at this. How many times do you see the Samaritans as, oh, those are those despised people. They're the half-breed. They're the, you know, and they go on and on. All these things, the Samaritans. Jesus was constantly using the Samaritans to hold up as an example. And that's what he does here. Standing in contrast to these scribes with all their might is this widow with her might. And what it does is it gives me hope. Because what Jesus does is he picks up and lifts up and calls out and holds up by way of example and makes heroes in the text of people that are weak and that are least likely to be pulled out of a crowd to say, this is the man, this is the one to follow. He grabs the most unlikely and unqualified, and that makes him calling out the people that are most like me, because that's the way we all are, aren't we? Why would we be held up by Jesus as an example? Well, when you realize who Jesus and what he could see, who Jesus called out and what Jesus could see in people that others miss, then there's hope in that. So let's look at the text, and I'd like to bring out about four or five points, and then the lesson will be yours. In Luke chapter 20, let's begin in verse 45. Then in the hearing of all the people, he said to his disciples, "Beware the scribes who desire to go around in long robes, love greetings in the marketplaces and the best seats in the synagogues and in the best places at the feast, who devour widows' houses and for a pretense make long prayers. These will receive greater condemnation." And he looked up, and see, there's a chapter break there. And I don't think we should see like the passing of time and, you know, the next day this happened. I think we're right here. All of this is together. He's just said, see these scribes? Well, see what they do. Then he looked up, and he saw the rich putting their gifts into the treasury. And he said, and he saw also a certain poor widow putting in two mites. Now, the text doesn't bring it out here in Luke, but it does in Mark. It says that Jesus sat himself down across from the treasury. Can you imagine that? Imagine, like, instead of passing the plates among you, what if we just passed you past the plate? You know, we're just going to put a basket up here in the front, and then we're going to call you up row by row and let you drop your money in, and I'm going to stand there and watch you, you know, and I'm just going to see, ooh, you know, write that down, you know, and so Jesus plants himself to where he can see these people giving. A lot of folks wouldn't have liked that. The nerve of him. What, who does he think he, what's he doing? He watching me give. This is between me and God. Well, Jesus was God. And so it was a matter that he had a right to be a part of. But as he was watching, he saw these scribes give great money, great amounts. And then he saw this widow woman come up and put in two mites, two pennies, if you will. And he said, "Truly I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all. For all these out of their abundance have put in offerings for God. But she out of her poverty put in all the livelihood she had." Now that's the lesson. But what I'd like for us to do now is to go back and see what we can learn. And here's my challenge to you. We're introduced to two people. We've got the scribes and we've got a poor widow. And I want you, by the end of this lesson, to tell me who you identify most with. Do you most identify with the widow woman in this story, or do you most identify with the scribes in this story? And let's be honest, because we can't fool God anyway. Who is it that is most like you? Who are you most like, the scribes or the widow? And what we got to do to answer that question is compare their actions. And when we get done with this lesson, having compared their actions with our actions, I want you to ask yourself and to honestly answer, who am I most like? So let's start with this point. First of all, here are some common lessons. There are some that whenever you read this text, these are the things that always are brought out, always are said. These are the things that are always preached on, which are good. And I want to do that, but then I want to give you some uncommon, two points that are not always brought out when I hear these lessons preached about. But here's the first one. First common lesson is that the widow gave. Okay, she gave. Not everybody gives. You know, what Kennedy, when he was inaugurated, he said, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. Very famous statement that he made in his inauguration. And that's something that we need to be asking about the church. Some people treat religion as, I need to become a part of this because when I do, there are privileges. Like AARP, I got one of those cards. I don't understand. They sent it to me. I'm not that old, but they sent me one of those AARP cards. And, oh, you got to be in this because when you get in this, I understand that there are all kind of discounts and you can, you know, that's what they view religion as. Oh, I need to be a part of the church because when you're a part of the church, you get this and you get this and you get this. Well, yeah, there are serendipitous blessings to being a Christian, but that's not why we do it. It's because of who Jesus is and who God is. That's the reason we do it. And what can, instead of having the mindset when we come into Christianity, now what can the church do for me? We ought to be asking, what can I do for the church? How can I help advance the cause of Christ? Man, I have been blessed to be a part of this body of believers and to be an heir of heaven. So how do I show my gratitude? What can I do? That woman had this attitude. She wasn't one that was going to coast. She wasn't one that was going to let others bear her burdens. She wasn't going to just tag along and ride on the coattails of somebody else's giving and hard work and labor. She herself participated in giving. Folks, listen, if you're not giving, you need to give. Not because you got to give and there's a command. It's the spirit behind the giving. It's like that speed limit sign. There's a reason for it. Don't just go 25 because there's a sign up that says go 25. Go 25 because that law is written on your heart. You understand why the law was there. That's the same thing with giving. Giving shouldn't be done just because, well, we got to give. It should be done because of what we get to, well, we get to partner with God and his brethren in his work and his mission in this world. What's it like to be able to say, I partner with God? What an honor. What a blessing. When we give, you know, I can always find excuses. If I'm in high school, I'm too young to give. My parents take care of that. You know, I make money. Yeah, sure. I get money and money's given to me and I get allowances and I do odd jobs and I get money. But my mom and dad do the giving. I don't have to give when I'm in high school. When I'm in college, I'll give. Well, then we get to college and we say, man, I got college bills. There's things to do. I've got dates to pay for. I'm on a limited amount of money and, you know, I've got this and that and books to buy. You know how much you charge for those books you buy in college? And so we can rationalize not giving. Well, when I get out of college and I get on my own, that's when I'll give. And you get on your own and then maybe you're married or you're paying rent and you're paying car payments by yourself for the first time and insurance and that maybe you have children and wow, they got college education. You know how much that is? I've got to start laying aside for that. My point is, and I think you see it, if you need to rationalize a reason not to give, you can always find one. No matter what station in life you're in, you'll always find reasons why that's not for you. That's for somebody else to do. This widow, if anyone could have rationalized, it would have been her. She had 2 pennies to her name, and she came and gave those to the cause. She gave, number one. Let's be people that give. Number two, she gave sacrificially. It's one thing to give out of your abundance where you never miss it. You know, there are some people that can just skim off the top of their income and give huge amounts of money to various causes, and that's wonderful. But it's sometimes not sacrificial giving because they gave out of their abundance. Luke chapter 21, verses 2 through 3 says, you know, she gave more than the others, and she gave all that she had. It was a sacrifice. It was costly to her. When's the last time, can you remember the last time that you gave, and when you gave, you said, because I'm doing this, I'm not going to be able to do something else that I want to do. Because I'm going to put aside this money and I'm going to put it into the kingdom of God and to the advancement of His cause, there are going to be some things that we're going to have to do at home. We're not going to have as big a Christmas this year as we did last year because there was this need and we put money toward that. And so we're going to have to tell ourselves, no, it's going to have to be a little bit smaller. Or, you know, I'd like to buy that new car. I know mine has so many miles on it, and I'd like to get it, but I'm going to tell myself no this year, and I'll do it next year, because this year there's this cause that I need to be a part of. When's the last time you gave, not gave, but gave sacrificially, where you really needed the money, but you gave it anyway, and you had to readjust the way you live? Because you gave to that extent. This widow gave everything. She gave sacrificially. She had nothing left when she gave. Do we give sacrificially? So we see the widow, she gives. She gives sacrificially. And here's the third thing that's said about her in verse 3. She gave more. She gave more. More than what? More than what everybody else gave. Yeah, but they put in out of their abundance, and they were putting in gifts into the treasury, and she just gave two mites, but Jesus said she gave more. And the reason for that is because Jesus looks at what we have left, not what we give. It's not just the amount that we give that He's concerned about. He wants to see, what are we after we've given? They still had abundance, the scribes. Oh, they may have come in with their money bags, and I don't know that they would just take it and just drop the whole bag in it. I'm kind of thinking they might just go like this, take a handful, sprinkle it in, take another handful, sprinkle it in. And while they're doing that, looking around like, you watching this? Look at that. And just, you know, just doing their show, all for pretense. She gave more. In 2 Corinthians chapter 8, there's a statement made where Paul, a great part of his ministry, was going about trying to gather up this contribution, mainly from Gentile Christians, to take back to him, with him to Jerusalem to help the Jewish Christians who were having a hard time. They were in some need. And so he would go to different congregations, and some of those congregations had more money than others, and some didn't have nearly as much. Macedonia was poor, and out of their deep poverty they gave. And you know, here's what Paul said. You know, some of you rich churches have given a bunch, and your abundance compensates for this poor church's gift. They gave too, but they didn't give nearly as much as you did. Don't count that as being unfair. He said, actually, that's an equality. You see, you've given out of your abundance and they've given out of their poverty, and together you have created an equality. It was because of the sacrificial nature of the giving. God doesn't see and care primarily what's the number, how many zeros are on the check. What He wants to look at is, what do you have left? Have you given with equality? Might we be rich and wealthy and well-to-do, and when we get done giving, we're still very well-to-do, and it's not been really a sacrifice at all. Oh, there are things we could have found to do with that money. Don't misunderstand me. But I haven't ever denied myself because of the depths of my giving. It's never been that kind of giving. Well, so those are three common lessons that we see about this widow. She gave sacrificially, and she gave more than those who were rich. But now let me point out two lessons, and then the lesson will be yours. Two uncommon lessons from this same text that I don't often hear talked about. And the first lesson is this. There is a shame to be placed upon the scribes. Luke chapter 20, verses 46 and 47. Beware the scribes who desire to go around in long robes, love greetings in the marketplaces and the best seats in the synagogues and the best places at the feast, who devour widows' houses and for a pretense make long prayers. These will receive greater condemnation. These scribes are at the top of the heap. They've got everything going for them. They're the religious elitist of the day. And they have their long robes. Wonder if those cost anything. And I wonder how those were paid for. And they go around and make a scene. They draw attention to themselves. That's what it's all about. They have money to give. And they make sure, in fact, Jesus said elsewhere, you know, they would blow a trumpet. And everybody goes, what was that? And they look around so just in time to see them drop their money in the plate. Shame on them. They devour widows' houses. These guys who have money and who are well-to-do are taking advantage of those who don't have money. They're manipulating for what they call the cause of God, the advancement of the kingdom. And they're relying on poor widows to drive and to promote and to subsidize their agenda. What's up with that? I mean, how can the rich use the poor to fund what they want done? That's what these guys were doing. They were well off, and they were taking advantage of the vulnerable. They were allowing those with the least to fund the work while they enjoyed their abundance. Has that ever happened? Do you ever see people put guilt trips and manipulate other people? Those sometimes who are least likely and able to give, they're the ones that are bearing the burden and bearing the load of whatever this is, while those with much stand back and let it happen. Not too long ago, I was watching television. I saw a preacher on television. He's talking about a $6 million project that he wanted done. It's going to cost $6 million. And then he promptly announced that God gave him a vision and told him, this is what God says to him. This is what I want you to do. And you tell the people there that this is my project. And so he said, I'm just here to tell you today that, you know, we got this $6 million project. And actually, it's God's project. And if you don't want to give, you're fighting God. And so kind of just, well, you lay a guilt trip. That's his project. God didn't tell him that. That's what he wants done, and uses the authority that he has and uses and calls upon God to get this done. And who has to pay for it? The people. That's what the scribes were doing. Do we have religious leaders today that will develop a cause and then manipulate people to see that cause through? A shameful behavior. To have and to live in abundance and then draw from and devour the houses of widows to see to it that it gets done. And here's the second uncommon lesson, and that is that she gave anyway. People don't talk about that. What we have is an abusive system. We have these scribes who are making, praying off of these widows. They're praying off of the poor. They're taking their money and their homes to fund their projects. And it's abusive. It's wrong. Jesus says they'll be condemned for it. Even more, greater condemnation, verse 47. So when she walks up to this treasury with her two pennies and drops it in there, she's dropping it into a corrupt system. These religious leaders weren't up and up, but she gave anyway. See, she doesn't answer for that. If somebody wants to misuse funds, they can misuse funds and God will hold them accountable for it. But she didn't have you ever heard of this happening? Until those elders make decisions that I like, I'm not giving anymore. You know, I'll give my money down the road to some other church, or I'll give my money across town to this church. But until the elders get in alignment with my way of thinking, I'm not going to give anymore. That's not the way of this widow. They were abusing the system. They were praying off of widows. But she understood her responsibility to God. And she came and she gave, even though, in spite of the fact that they were misusing some of the funds that she was giving. Do we quit paying our taxes because we don't like the way our government spends our tax money, our tax dollars? No. Jesus said, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's. And he also said, render unto God the things that are God's. Here are five lessons from this account that I want you to give consideration to. And as we do, again, I want to ask you, who are you more like? Who do you identify with the most? Are you more like the scribes, or are you more like the widow? The widow gave. She gave sacrificially and she gave more. She gave in spite of an abusive system. The scribes, they took advantage. They didn't give sacrificially. They gave just of their abundance and they manipulated other people. They were willing to sit back and let others fund the work that they should have been funding out of their wealth. Who do you identify with the most? If you read the story and you say, well, I don't really think I'm like the scribes in every respect. And I see that the widow was doing some things that I don't do either. And I may not quite be like her. Well, that's the point of Jesus' teachings. That's what he did. He confronted us with truths that hit us where we lived and say, now what are you going to do about it? Are you going to make changes? Or are you going to just listen and then go away and not make any changes? James talks about that in James 1. He said, are you going to be a forgetful hearer? I've always used this illustration, but you know, in the morning, ladies, if you're putting on your lipstick and you're trying to be real careful, and then one of your children come up behind you and scream top of their lungs and scare you half to death, and you run that lipstick across your face, are you going to look in the mirror and go, oh my, and then just walk away and come to church anyway? You won't. I know you won't. But that's exactly what we do when we open the Word of God and we see what it says and we go, oh my. Boy, that is all over me. That nails me. Well, okay. Let's go to church. We've got changes to make. If you don't see yourself identifying completely with this widow, make changes. If you find yourself kind of like those scribes, make changes. Few of us find ourselves in situations where we don't have any improvement to make. I'd say most of us find room for improvement. Let's be about that. Not because somebody says, give, we need money, but because the spirit behind the commands that God has given. Why do we give? so that we can seek and save the lost, so that we can advance the borders of the kingdom of God, so that we can reach people with a gospel that will change their eternal destiny, so we can lift the downtrodden and the poor and meet their needs and introduce them to Jesus, and their lives not only here but forever can be changed. That's the purpose for behind giving. It's not just an exercise of discipline to see who will and who won't this week. It's an exercise of Christ-likeness and owning the agenda of Jesus himself to seek and save the lost. If you're here this morning, you're not yet a child of God, why don't you obey the gospel? Jesus said, he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. If you haven't done that, do that today. If you're a child of God already but unfaithful, maybe there's some things that we talked about this morning that cause you to say, I need to change and I want to do it. And we'll pray for you that you be strong and faithful in following Jesus in whatever he asks us to do. If you need to respond, we invite you to come as we stand together and sing.